back in the USSR. Well, the unibrow girls really knocked me out.
Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris, and we are here to talk about the enormous, overwhelming, incredible box set of the White Album Super Deluxe collection here that just came out on November 9th, and I'm holding it here. It's about 4 pounds, I read, and Chris is holding his as well. We've got it here, and it is, we thought the Sgt. Pepper box set was amazing and overwhelming and had so much stuff, and it was, and we didn't think that they could top it, and
In fact, you predicted that this set would never come out.
No, like, I did.
They're not even going to do it.
You never miss a chance to keep reminding me of that. But I'm proud to say I'm holding copy number 67,454, and which one do you have?
I have 25280.
Okay, very good. You got an early one. Wow.
That's right.
So it is really impressive, and so much here to talk about that we're going to have to, I think we're going to all be digesting this for a while because there's just so much. And I just came back from the, as Chris mentioned when he unboxed the set in the video, and I've mentioned on the previous episode, I came back from a symposium at Monmouth University in New Jersey and got to hear all about this album and the materials behind it and some of the people involved. Chris Thomas was there, the engineer who filled in for George Martin when he went on vacation. Mark Lewison gave an amazing 2-hour talk about what the Beatles were doing around the White Album time, and a lot of other great guest speakers. So
that'll be in book 6 of his.
Yes,
it will coming be out in 2030.
2030, I think, is the expected release date. Yeah, just all sorts of things happening. But I did make a personal vow to myself not to listen to this collection at all while I was there, because it came out when I was there. Yeah. And people were talking about it. There were listening parties and all sorts of things going on, but I purposely waited until I got home. And so this past week, I've been just consumed with it, as I know you have as well. And just kind of in a general sense here, we're going to talk about it and comparing it to Sgt. Pepper, but how do you view, what's your level of excitement when you got this versus the Sgt. Pepper set last year?
Off the charts.
Yeah.
Of the, you know, Dave, this that what this really reminded me is, I don't know if you remember back down when we were both at the University of Illinois in Champaign, that they used to have these twice a year, basically, for lack of a better term, bootleg tape conventions where you'd go, you'd pay like a fee to get in, and then everybody's selling bootleg videos and bootleg tapes and stuff like that. And I know for certain that I bought a couple of White Album related bootlegs and listened to them to over and over, and like fell in love with Not Guilty and fell in love with all these tracks, but they were like, you know, so not good. Not like,
the audio quality
not like
was
in great shape.
And
the audio quality was awful, but and I probably paid like $20 for the tape or whatever.
Yep.
You know, so to have these pristine, you know, straight from George's vault, the Escher demos.
Yeah.
It's just like so exciting.
Yeah.
So amazing.
And I thought we got a good taste of it when we had the anthology came out. We heard some of those Escher demos, and we heard some of the couple of the, actually there's a little bit of duplication on this set, not a lot, but there's some. You get the complete takes of some things that were cut in the anthology, but the quality is just so, it totally changes the way you hear everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. And some of these bonus tracks, and we'll get to that, are just like outstanding, partially because you really can very much hear what's going on.
Yeah.
With all the parts and everything. So it's great. It's not like poorly mixed, you know, fifth generation stuff.
No, not at all. So.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is that this set kind of and Giles Martin has been going out of his way in all of these interviews, and I think to his credit, of recontextualizing sort of the narrative behind the recording that they were so separate and in separate rooms, mm-hmm. and didn't care about each other's stuff, and you know, and then John later is like, that's the sound of the of a band breaking up,
right.
and stuff like that.
Right.
But he's like, there's just no evidence of it in the tapes. It's more the sound of a band taking over, mm-hmm. rather than being the lackeys of, you know, George Martin. George Martin's in charge. Now it's like, well, we're in charge and we want to do more experimenting. We want to develop these songs slowly,
yeah.
over take after take and version after version, as we'll hear some different versions on this album of them developing a song and sometimes abandoning it, like, yeah. Not guilty because they couldn't get the vocals right, you know. So, but it really feels to me like, yeah, this wasn't as disjointed as we've always had the narrative told to us.
Right. That's something that's been noted in the reviews. A lot of people have mentioned that. Now, there was kind of a little dig at Giles Martin saying, oh, he's trying to look through rose-colored glasses here, and, you know, there was actually a lot of tension outside of the group, or outside of the studio, as we know, with Apple having problems, and with Yoko being a part of the sessions and all of that, but I think he's right, and you don't really notice that in a lot of the music, and especially in the book, which is really beautiful. There's a lot of great pictures that I've never seen before, and they don't look unhappy. They don't look like they hate each other. There's collaboration in the pictures. It seems like a generally good vibe, even if it did drag on. And this is where you have the 24-hour sessions and the ones starting at midnight, and
yeah,
it made George Martin kind of mad. But you don't really see a lot of negative stuff in the book, in the pictures, or in the music.
Yeah. Now I think that the attitudes of the people later on, after they break up and all of that, there was an interesting thing that Giles Martin said in one of these interviews, where he said, like, you know, John at some point had trashed George Martin.
Yeah.
And it hurt his feelings, and then George Martin had seen John years later and said, like, you know, that what you said was really, you know, I felt like unfair to my role in this. And John was like, what? I was high for many years. So I think we could, like, maybe dial back a little bit of stuff that, I mean, we've talked about this many times. Stuff that John said might not have been really motivated with the best intentions.
Right.
and may have been drug fueled.
And so. We know that was a factor here, especially with John, that he was starting to get involved in heroin use with Yoko, yeah. and that's apparent in some of the working methods and some of his behaviors. But goes in classical music, we always talk about this too, about how the composer may not always be the best judge of his or her work or the attitudes around it, because you're so involved and you're in your own world that you don't necessarily see it like everybody else does. So,
yeah.
And that's the case with, some of these sessions that we have on, and we should say the way this whole set is laid out, it's six CDs and then there's a Blu-ray that has just audio of the album itself.
I popped in the Blu-ray just to check it out, and it is a very good transfer, but there's no pause and play functionality.
No.
So what I had been doing is playing and then sort of like pausing it and then jumping around to other takes, and I wasn't able to do that on there. No. And I didn't realize that there wouldn't be the bonus tracks on the Blu-ray. I think the bonus tracks were on the Lennon set.
Yes, that, in fact, there were more things on the DVDs or the Blu-rays than on just the regular set in the Lennon deluxe package, the Imagine group package. So yeah, that is different here. So I don't know how useful the Blu-ray is, but the six discs themselves, you've got the Giles Martin remastered, remixed version on discs one and two of the original. Then disc three, the full Escher demos, which is a lot, it was, like you've said, we've heard a lot of these before in really bad quality. I've had a couple of bad bootlegs, and it's so different to hear them here. And then discs four, five, and six are all recording sessions with different takes, different discussions, some songs that never appeared on albums, things like that. That are really much better, as we were talking before the show, much better than the fly on the wall nonsense from the Let It Be Naked package. These are real good things here. So we're going to, you know, it's so overwhelming. We're just going to give you snippets and little highlights that we decided we thought we'd like to share. And everybody's got their own views, but there's just so much. So
we'll also talk. Talk for 5.1 album mixes for our gifts episode. We're going to have a special thing for talking about those mixes. We don't really, neither of us really have a good setup for 5.1 to hear that yet.
Yet, I know.
When I win that lottery, that's first thing. Absolutely. First thing on my list. And I did listen a little bit to the direct transfer of the album's original mono mix, which I've enjoyed listening to before, the mono mix of this, because it is very different from the stereo. This mix seems to be a hybrid. They'll keep I Got Blisters on My Fingers on this mix.
The way it was described, I saw, was taking, like you said, a hybrid, taking the best of the stereo and best of the mono and putting it into a stereo mix, because that's how we listen to things now. And so comparing, as we talk just very briefly about that Giles Martin remix here, we were also struck last year by the Sgt. Pepper one and how everything was so different. Paul and Ringo suddenly were much more part of the mix, and you could hear the bottom end, and the vocals had more presence, and some of the effects came through. White Album is a very different kind of musical package because it was not so elaborately constructed like Pepper. This is a lot more acoustic, a lot more simplicity in the orchestrations. So at first glance, I'm just wondering, did you think that there would be much of a difference, or were you expecting much of a difference in the remix?
I think maybe I was. Maybe I was more than we got. But what we got is I think he was going for sort of keeping it loose and keeping it kind of still a little bit of Ragged Edge. Maybe even more so, like pump up the Ragged Edge stuff. So like, for instance, we're going to play Everybody's Got Something Except for Me and My Monkey. And you'll hear that popping bass and the drums coming out pretty good. But you still get the chaos of the song, and particularly at the end where they're like, come on, come on, come on, come on, and stuff.
Okay, so yeah, you could really notice a big, a lot punchier track there, and especially in the bass. And there, I will say, listening to this album, the remixed version, I did hear some bass lines I've not heard before, and some drum fills and just subtleties that were brought out. So one of the reviewers I read said that, oh, this won't make anybody change their preferred mix, and they'll always stick to the George Martin one. But I don't know. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I don't know. I like this mix. I mean, I like the mix overall. I think it's great. You know, I've always, you know, in the last few years, especially preferred the mono mix
to the
stereo mix.
Mm-hmm.
So I might occasionally put on the mono mix instead of this. But just comparing the mono mix to this, the you know, right off the bat, it's like, oh, it sounds like, you know, it's a lot more full, and, you know. Mm-hmm. You can really hear some great stuff there. I did spend a little time in the dark with Revolution 9.
Oh yeah, me too.
And it will. It's spine tingling.
It's
it really
scary.
Is.
Yeah, it really. Yeah. Wow. I know people skip over Revolution 9 all the time, but you shouldn't if you haven't listened to it in a while. As we talked about with when we discussed the White Album, this album always scares me. And there's something very ominous and anxiety-ridden about it, especially in John and George's songs. And that really is brought out here. So, but yeah, that's well worth giving the new remix a spin. Yeah. But of course, we're all in it for disc 3, 4, 5, and 6. So.
That's right. We'd do a track by track, but we'd be here for like three hours. And we've already talked about this all the way back in episode 1.
Can you believe it? Yeah.
And we'd also like to leave a little bit of meat on the bones for some. We've talked about a few of these already in some songs under the microscope. So eventually, we'll hopefully get around to each of these. Yeah. Oh, can you wait for our Wild Honey Pie's organization?
I can't wait for that one.
Does Wild Honey Pie sounds even worse in this mix?
That was one minus for the box set remix. That Wild Honey Pie is even more grating than it used to be. Yeah. So, well, so let's get into the Escher demos a little bit, and we won't rehash the whole history of these, but other than just to say, these were. We have 27 tracks that were recorded at George's bungalow, and most of them were written when the Beatles were in India, and they came back and recorded on George's 4-track machine at his house. And it's as Giles said, I think it's the closest we'll get to Beatles unplugged. And a lot of the tracks are. Pretty close to how they would turn out, but with some notable differences. And there's also some tunes that were not recorded on not put on the album either, which we're going to get into. And we thought it'd be interesting I'll tee it off to you here. We thought it'd be interesting to talk about each Beatles' contributions to the Escher demos and to this whole session, because that really kind of, you get to see them blossoming as people and composers.
Yeah, and it really does come off like they're sitting around the campfire and singing all together. And, you know, a couple of things like Bungalow Bill and, you know, a couple of tracks like that really stand out as like, you know, that with that kind of feel. And I think one of the ones that I like the most that we've talked about a lot in the last episode actually is Child of Nature, and this is you know, an early version of John, and I think that the John early versions here are a little rougher than what we'll do is contrast it with early version from Paul. So let's hear a little Child of Nature.
On the road to Rishikesh, I was dreaming more or less, and the dream I had was true. Yes, the dream I had was true. I'm just a child of nature. I don't need I'm just a child of nature. I'm one of nature's children. Sunlight shining in my eye.
I mean, you can just imagine him sitting around the fire at Rishikesh.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
singing that one.
And of course, that became the foundation, same tune of Jealous Guy. And how do you like the lyrics of Child of Nature as a song? Obviously, it's about their time in Rishikesh and being in, out in nature. What do you think of that whole metaphor?
I like it. I like it. And I like a few of these, like, you know, would change and alter from what they were originally. And I like that we've got this sort of like almost a snapshot of like just fresh from their trip, their life-altering possibly trip, hang out with the Maharishi and everything.
Right.
So
yeah, that's good. And the John tunes on there. So you've got from John on the Isher demos, we have Glass Onion, we have Bungalow Bill, Happiness is a Warm Gun, which is very interesting because he mentions Yoko in there. Yoko, oh no, oh no.
Oh no.
Yoko, oh no, oh yes. got I'm So Tired, Julia, Your Blues, Everybody's Got Something to Hide, Sexy Sadie, Revolution, Cry Baby Cry, Child of Nature, Mean Mr. Mustard, Polythene Pam, and What's the New Mary Jane. So very Lennon heavy, and
yeah.
he really and, came out with a lot of tunes.
And all the ones you mentioned are all just little sketches.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them would never develop past that,
right.
Say Polythene Pam.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Yeah.
So, but then, you know, some of them would eventually change and they, when they got into the studio and work on them. Whereas Paul, different story.
Mm-hmm. Paul's always got, seems like he's got the full conception of a song almost figured out from the beginning. Not a lot of tunes from Paul that are real kind of half-hearted fragments. There are some, but we're going to play an example of one that seems like it's almost ready to go on the album here, and that's Blackbird from the Isher demos. Paul likes, that's one of his old saws, one of his favorite stories to constantly retell, the one about the, listening to the Bach Bure from the E minor lute suite and how he and George used to play it as a at a party or on the bus or wherever, and they just took that little bit. But it's, yeah, it's almost fully formed there. And
yeah.
It just sounds, yeah, like very, very complete. And so what really the only difference to the final version, we added the footsteps and the blackbirds, I guess. That's not too much to it, and changed some of the ordering, but very good compared to John.
Joy, I just wanted to say, if you run down the line of the Paul tunes, what do we got here? Back in the USSR, more or less. I mean, it's acoustic, and they'd make it a rock song, but otherwise it's, you know, we got Obla Dee, Obla Da, you know, that's pretty similar. I mean, it's pretty well formed already. What else we got here?
Rocky Raccoon
and Honey Pie. So most of his on here are pretty well formed. he's got less demos on these than than John and George, really.
That's a good segue to go into George. One of the biggest revelations for me on this set was, we know George had the four tunes and you've on the real album, and we know the some of the outtakes like Not Guilty, but George's tunes on here are really outstanding, and his stature as a recording artist and as a musician is in full bloom at this point. So on these Escher demos, you've got an interesting group of tunes here. And tell me what you think of Circles and Not Guilty. What else is on here from George? We have
Sour Milk Sea.
Yeah.
Sour Milk Sea. Is that Jackie Lomax walking by?
Yeah, a little pre-Jackie Lomax.
Not Guilty, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Piggies.
Yeah. I really like Piggies on this. I think it sounds fantastic. But, you know, for interest, the thing, maybe I had a blind spot, and I don't know if I ever heard Circles or...
I know why you have a blind spot for it. Because
why is that?
What album is it on?
Is it that the end of Tropo?
Is that,
I don't think I ever make it to the end of God Tropo.
That's why you don't know it.
Yeah. Strange that it would sit on the shelf for so long. That would also happen, obviously, with Not Guilty. He'd totally forgotten about Not Guilty, apparently, when he finally put it on George Harrison. But let's hear Circles. We got to hear Circles because it's fascinating.
Friends go, psycho round and round in circles. Love warms and love colds, psycho round and round in circles. He who knows does not speak. He who speaks does not know. And I go round in circles. Life comes and life.
What do you think of Circles, Dave?
It's a very strange tune. It's very dreary and a little bit reminiscent of Blue Jay Way. And it's kind of dour gloominess, but there's something attractive about it in its spiritual sense, I think. There's in the idea of circles being round and you're always coming back to where you started. And I don't know. It's kind of hard to put your finger on it, but it is fascinating to listen to.
Yeah. So what's your overall feeling, though, about these Escher demos?
Oh, they're fantastic, I think. And they fixed a lot of the awful audio quality. And then I remember my version of Obla-Di Obla-Da had double tracking that was really out of sync. And it was very hard to listen to. And they fixed that for the most part. And I think as a document, it is incredibly important. And just shows the Beatles' working methods in a much clearer, more interesting way than we ever have had before.
Yeah.
So I think they're fantastic.
I agree. Yeah, I don't know that anything like this exists for any of the other...
No.
We're not going to get an Escher demos of Let It Be.
No. So. No, and I wonder if it happened because the Beatles had come back from India and were in kind of a... You know, they left at different times, but they were maybe spiritually rejuvenated, or they kind of were excited to get back to each other and get back to working on music, and just had this inspiration just pouring out of them. It was unlike any other time, where in the previous years they were so tired from touring, or they'd been on drugs and LSD stuff and pepper and doing their own thing, or... later having all the problems. So it's kind of a nice snapshot of the time of being together in the community aspect. So
yeah.
So then we get onto these three massive discs of session takes and discussions. So,
I don't know about you, Dave, but I've just been devouring this stuff.
Yeah,
there's,
me too.
There's so much great stuff here all over the place, but we're going to jump around and talk about some of the more interesting ones. So why don't you start us off with something on CD4 there, Dave?
All right. Well, the first track, this is another one that's been bootlegged before, and I remember when it came out several years ago, it was a big deal. But it's Revolution 1, and it's take 18 of it. And it's unique because it's long. And what happened, I guess, at the recording session of it is they were just jamming out at the end, going, all right, all right. And John's doing different vocal things happening. And then all of a sudden, they hear some other stuff coming on to the recording from a tape. And George Martin is like, what's that? And it was Yoko with a tape recorder playing a lot of the clips and noises, effects, and things that we would later hear on Revolution 9. So let's take a little bit of a listen. Maybe we'll go in the middle of the tune. So we can start to hear when John's vamping at the end and then some of these weird effects come in.
Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Don't you know? Don't you know?
Wow. So, yeah, this is, if you can believe it, that was the first tune recorded for the White Album was Revolution 1, and then all this stuff comes in. So, I always wondered where that creepy, right, all right, right, came in, and came from, and that's where it came from. So, what's your take on listening to this whole long mashup of stuff?
Well, I love it, obviously, and it shows the process, you know. It started with this sort of long kind of experimental take, and I guess that's why George Martin really hated the White Album so much, because he liked, Giles Martin's been talking about the difference between the albums before that and this one is there was a blueprint to the albums before that. And this one, they wanted to just go in there and see what happened on a lot of tracks. So, you know, just that take alone would become two different songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Revolution 1 and 9, and then obviously we'd have a different Revolution as well.
Yeah,
so,
which you can hear about in our just, song Under the Microscope that we did under in Revolution. Yeah,
that's right. So... yeah, so pretty great. And obviously we'd get also on CD4, we won't listen to the full Helter Skelter. Helter Skelter here starts as a slow sort of like jam, sort of a thumping kind of jam.
Mm-hmm.
Almost creepy, kind of like slowly creeping up on you and then blasts into the Paul screaming kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. Yeah, so
We
another example here on CD4 of something that would change a little bit. Oh man, this is so great. And then I'm like totally in love with this version of Goodnight. And there's a whole article's been written about just about this take, and it's Good Night with the rest of the Beatles singing on it as well.
Good night, take 10.
It's time to say good night. Good night. Sleep tight. Now the sun puts out his light. Good night. Sleep tight. Dream sweet dreams for me.
A lot different than it would end up being.
Yeah.
That take.
Yeah, and I've read some places that said that because it's not with an orchestra, it's John doing his Julia-type guitar picking, which we've talked about before, that he learned from Donovan, that maybe George Martin thought that it would be too repetitious to have too many songs with that type of guitar on it, and that's why it was changed. And I would mention that they include another take of George Martin playing piano with Ringo, and the piano playing is just gorgeous, really, really beautiful. So you really have seen both sides of John here with the Revolution 1 madness that we heard just a while ago, and then you have this version, and the Beatles singing the backup harmonies. There's a nice sweetness to it that really goes along. And it's not overly sickly sweet. It's like very earnest.
Yeah. CD4 is the shortest of the three bonus discs, probably because of the length of Revolution and the 12-minute Helter Skelter.
Yeah, this raises the question then. So do you really want to hear that 27-minute version of Helter Skelter after you've heard 12 or 13 minutes here?
No, I'm probably all right. Probably all right.
Yeah, I think we get the gist
of it. And maybe eventually it'll come out. But he's pretty much said, like, yeah, it's just more of the same that you hear on this one, and this one's better.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, maybe you're asking for something you don't really want.
Right, exactly. You
know? Like, I want the gigantic steak.
Yes.
Like, oh, now my stomach hurts. So.
Yes.
Yeah, so what next here? So
moving on to disc 5 here, we have more sessions, and we get an appearance of a couple of tunes that are not on the actual album. So we have Let It Be, but we're not going to play it, but Let is a very early version of Let It Be. Sounds quite different. Are you a big fan of the version of the Let It Be that they have here?
Well, it's sort of chaotic. It's like almost just like not even anything. But I think he just wanted to include it to be like, isn't this crazy that Let It Be was played on even on this session? Wow.
Right, right.
It's more like that, you know. And then there's some stuff. We start to get some stuff like St. Louis Blues, which is just like little jams that he'll include. But then there's some seminal touchstones, like Not Guilty. But this Not Guilty is a little better than the version on Anthology, I think, because they inexplicably cut some of the song for that version. I don't understand why.
But we're going to play you one of the unreleased tunes that's very famous and infamous in the Beatles catalog here, and that's What's the New Mary Jane, which came from, has a lot of Indian references and in the lyrics with eating chapatis and other sorts of things. There's some unusual percussion played by Yoko Ono and Mal Evans, like including ripping paper percussion, a football rattle, an accordion, a tambourine, and a handbell, and some other sorts of things with the John and Yoko screaming and echo and freaking out and all this sort of stuff. So we're going to listen to the simpler version here. Take one of What's the New Mary Jane.
One, two, three, one, two.
as an African queen. She eating 12 chapatis and cream. She taste as Mongolian lamb. She coming from Aldebaran. What a shame Mary Jane had a pain at the party. What a shame Mary Jane, what a shame Mary Jane had a pain at the party. She liked to be married with Yeti. He grooving such cookie spaghetti.
So Chris, what's your impression of what's the new Mary Jane as a song?
You know, I've always kind of liked it. I think I'm maybe in the minority here, but I've always kind of liked it, and I've thought of it as like, oh, this would have been an awesome B-side. Sort of like...
Oh, you know my name, look up you the know, number.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It sort of has a feel of that to me, like this isn't very serious.
Yeah.
Now, the full-blown version is also kind of gets, like you said, into weird experimental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know ripping paper was a music thing. I guess I do play an instrument pretty well.
Pretty often. Sometimes.
As a writer, I'm ripping a lot of paper.
You're a percussionist. Yeah.
Yep. But I've always kind of enjoyed it as a weird little funky song, you know.
Yeah, very much so.
Not up there with their, you know, it's no Let It Be.
No.
But I like that that little experiments are included here, and sometimes these experiments would be otherwise have been tossed away were actually used in the album. And one of the great examples of that, we're going to skip down to disc 6 to hear a little tune, little pitter pattery tune called Can You Take Me Back?
Can you take me by the hand? No more trouble, can you take me? Can you take me by the hand? All you trouble, face the grotto. Can you take me by? Can you take me? Can you take me? Can you take me back?
And of course, that would end up being at the end of Cry Baby Cry. And one of the things that would repeat over Paul's career, you know, mm-hmm. little songs like Suicide that never turned into songs would be like added to the end of songs as sort of like little transitional pieces between songs. And I like it. I've always sort of enjoyed that aspect of Paul and the Beatles.
Yeah,
being able to use things that otherwise would be thrown away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can tell that was a improv in the studio, just kind of back and forth. Someone's playing some mean bongos on there, or going wild with the woodblock or something. But yeah, the first time I heard it, I kept waiting for when it actually. It's right towards the end is when you get the actual clip that was used for the White Album. But yeah, very. Interesting, like I was saying, with the all right to find out where all of these little quirky things came from is one great benefit of this box set.
Yeah.
So speaking of where things came from, we'll move now to a George tune back on disc 5. Everybody knows the story of E.C., Eric Clapton, playing on the tune, playing the guitar solo, but we hadn't really noticed that there was another version of its alternate take of George and Eric playing on this. So let's listen to a little of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, take 27.
I'll just have cheese and lettuce and Marmite sandwich and coffee. Okay, a 1, 2, 3, 4.
You all see the love, the
Yeah,
what, Easy sounds so good.
He does. And what happens at the end of that song? It's very funny.
he tries to sing the high part, and he's like, it breaks down, and he goes, I tried to go, talking about Smokey Robinson, I tried to go Smokey there, and I just aren't Smokey.
They all laugh. Yeah.
But and the piano there at the beginning is awesome, too.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, Paul on that. Yeah. So you get if you're a big fan of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, you get that version, which is neat, and you get a lot of acoustic versions from the Escher and also from the studio. And what do you think about the use of that there? There's an organ that's constantly appearing in the early versions, but you don't really hear it very much on this, on the final version.
Yeah, I liked it on the slow version, contrasting with the slow version. That's the one on the ones they put out early, and I was like really enjoying it very much. I like it a lot. Once again, and another song that just evolved, you know.
Yeah. It's,
both versions are kind of good.
Right.
I mean, I feel that way about all of these. Like, the slow version of Helter Skelter is awesome, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to hear this. Oh, man, great to hear EC there, too.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I definitely wanted to play one of the ones that just, like, sends chills down my spine is hearing John on this particular take of Sexy Sadie. It's like he's right there in the room with you. It's just...
Yeah, it's getting better all the time.
Is it right?
How fast, John?
However you like, you know. Feel it.
Sexy Sadie, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone. You made a fool of everyone. Sexy Sadie, oh, have you done? Sexy Sadie, you broke the rule. You laid it down for all to see. You laid it down for all to see. Sexy Sadie, oh, you broke the rules on sunny day. The world is waiting for a lover.
Maybe a little bit of a slower version there, but oh man, the guitar at the beginning there, ugh.
Sweet,
kind of reminded me of some Velvet Underground or something.
It could,
you know?
That there's a lot of like underground type or, you know, punkish, pre-punk or kind of real dirty tunes on here in those early versions before they cleaned them up, and. Obviously you see how the Beatles were such a tight band when they played together, and a good rockin' band, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we jump down to disc six, I just want to mention all three of these discs have sort of for lack of a better term, elements. Like from which was coined for the John Lennon set. You get the like a Revolution instrumental backing track on the fourth disc. You'll get like Back in the USSR, which is just a backing track, and then there's Birthday and Piggies and Honey Pie. Well, which, by the way, that Honey Pie really shows off that what we were talking about on the John Lennon guitar
episode.
He sounds great on that, and Savoy Truffle. So what do you think about all these, and I think the Inner Light also appears here. So what do you think about those?
I like them. I think they're not ones I'd listen to that much because you miss the words, obviously, but and the singing. But you get to see the attention to detail. And you mentioned Honey Pie. I was struck not only with the Lennon solo, but the scoring of the clarinets and the saxophones. And it's just like, it's totally note perfect 1920s, 30s scoring from Martin. So you really get to hear, like, I think this all started way back when the anthology came out, when we heard Eleanor Rigby with just the strings and the isolation, the elements, like we say. They're interesting. I don't, you know, listen to them that much, but you pick up on a lot more.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I also think as we go into our last two, we're going to play here off of disc six, that he did a good job of giving us some of the sillier things, so, like I Will, the version that says I won't. A short version that just ends with I won't.
It's very funny.
Step Inside Love and Los Paranoias are on this. And, you know, a lot of the chatter, as we say, and there's some chatter on these next two we're going to play, but it's chatter that sort of like really does bring you inside the studio and really makes you appreciate. We heard a little bit there of George putting in his sandwich order too.
Yes, that's true.
Kind of. I think it is sort of like, if his main thesis is, hey, these guys got along,
yeah,
then this is more and more evidence of that.
Yeah. Now, the next tune, my last one that I'm going to play here, is one that has always been a favorite of yours, I know, and also a favorite of mine, but it's one that gets swallowed up a lot in the actual White Album proper because of where it's placed. It's in between Helter Skelter and Revolution 1, and so it's you kind of lose it sometimes. It's at the end of it. It was at the end of side three, and that's George's Long, 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 which really is brought up prominently on the remixed album. You can hear things a lot better, and it just sounds much, much more full. And so we're going to play you just a rehearsal take. This is from, as you said, CD 6, take 44 of it. And there's some funny stuff at the end. It breaks down, but it's very haunting. And so let's take a listen to Long, Long, Long.
Right, here we go. Here we go, lads. We're not really what we make out to be. That's all I can say. Where did Mal get those joysticks? The very Rishikesh joysticks. One, two, three. No, missed it. One, two, three. It's been a long, long, long time. How could I ever have lost you?
In that remixed version, the ending of it, you hear that what was described as a disembodied voice moaning, and it's especially creepy.
Oh, you mean,
very good. Yeah, did you just play the remix there? That was good.
Yeah, it's like it's right into the microphone. Huh?
Yeah, it is. I know. So, yeah just beautiful take, very hypnotic, very powerful song. So, I'm glad it's finally getting some credit and what the treatment that it deserves.
One of my other just absolute favorites on this album has always been one of my top favorite songs, always, is I'm So Tired. And we get a couple takes of that. There's take sevens on here, but let's play take 14 and give a listen to that, because I think it's pretty good. And this one's got some cool backup vocals that you don't really hear on the main track.
Okay, we do it again. Try and leave those spaces, Paul, because it's all that remix, you got to pull it all out a bit. One, two, three.
I'm so tired, I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired, my mind is on the blink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, 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 I'm so tired, I don't know what to do. Set on you. I wonder, should I call you? But I know what you would do. You'd say I'm putting you on, but it's no joke. It's doing me harm. You know I can't sleep, I can't stop my brain. You know it's 3 weeks, I'm going insane. You know I'd give you everything I've got for a little peace of mind. Is there something like a delicious?
Whew. I love it.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds great. And there, like you said earlier, there's the, you see, you heard at the beginning, John directing, talking about, oh, leave some space there. And so it seems very constructive. I don't hear a lot of bickering. We don't know. We don't have everything, but yeah. It does seem very constructive and like they're actually working on stuff. So yeah. That's great to hear. And the background vocals are a nice touch that, do you think they should have been kept for the album?
I've always loved the album version song. Yeah. It's just, I what I want in these bonus tracks give you exactly what you want, which is a little bit of a different versions of songs that you love and more view of how the songs were constructed. And I think it does a brilliant job of that.
Yes.
If I had if you have any complaint about the at all about this set, what is it, Dave?
Ooh, I don't know. I really can't think of too much, because maybe just the overwhelming nature of it is, it's just which isn't a bad thing, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't really have too much. I feel like it satiates a lot of what I want. I wanted the Escher demos and good sound. And all of them in one place. I wanted some interesting outtakes and rehearsal versions. Yeah. So I really don't have too much I can gripe about, I don't think. What you have some things.
I guess my only two would be that the Blu-ray needs to have that bonus material on that.
Yeah.
In case you want to play it through, if you're a guy who likes, would rather have the PCM stereo.
Right.
You're not getting that with the regular CDs or the streaming. I think it's just a little odd that they include Lady Madonna, Inner Light, those, but they don't, unlike the previous set, included Strawberry Fields, a new mix of that. So why not new mixes of that? That's a very, 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 very minor complaint. One of the great, great things about this set is this beautiful book.
Yes.
And they add so much value to this package. And the track-by-track stuff is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the person who wrote the track-by-track is Kevin Howlett. And just does a fantastic job. And both you and I have talked about sitting and reading through, say, Happiness is a Warm Gun, and then we'll play the Escher, and then we'll skip down and play the bonus track version, and then play the regular version. And but the whole book is great. There's one particular page where we've got all these song lyrics and everything, and there's a page that says song titles, and it's really fascinating because they have the song titles, and then someone has written what the songs are about kind of over to the side. So like, I'm So Tired, it says John in Bed. Don't Pass Me By, Ringo as Fiddler.
Yes.
Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey, which you said was potentially about drug use. It says Black Space.
And whereas Revolution 9 is White Space.
White Space, yeah. So it's very, very cool. One of my favorites here was Not Guilty, George Smiling Behind Bars.
Ooh,
So just that page alone is like awesome.
That's done in kind of like a scrapbook format where they have all the handwritten lyrics, like sort of in a notebook or something. And the paper is different, feels different, and it's like you could rip it out almost. with all the original song lyrics, handwritten. You've got a lot of tape boxes and studio outtake things with notes.
It's and a really, cool poster.
Yeah.
Although it's a two-sided poster, which aggravates me because it's like I got to get a magical two-sided poster case.
Sometimes. Yeah. You've got the original poster and the four cutout pictures of them. And it's just they really didn't miss any detail, I don't think, here. And just so many great pictures as well. So like my final question here, I guess, would be how does this change or impact your previous view of the White Album in the Beatles catalog? Where it fit for you originally?
I'd say it enhances it quite a bit for me because the old narrative of like, well, this is just disjointed songs and they're really not really about anything. I think less and less am I thinking that, and more am I thinking about, well, it is about them.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these songs are kind of personal songs, if not personal about personally them, but maybe about what they thought about the time that they were in. Revolution being about the time they were in, songs like that, you know. And more songs that I once sort of scoffed at, like Honey Pie. Right. How much more appreciation do we have for Honey Pie?
Yes.
The last couple of months after we've been listening to it for John's guitar part. That's really cool. And
right.
Stuff like that. So.
Right.
So even in the songs that aren't that great, we can find some great nuggets in them.
Yeah.
So I love it. I this set is great. It's going to be in heavy rotation throughout the rest of the year.
Definitely.
So overwhelming. Yes. And overwhelming, particularly when you add up that, well, I finally got that Imagine John Lennon set.
Oh, it finally arrived from
England. They even missed something in the package. It took like 8 weeks, and it's a nightmare. You Discover Music is garbage.
Yeah,
not good. And their customer service is even worse. So apologies that we ever posted something from You Discover Music. But anyway, I finally got that. So now I can dig through that. I'm digging through this.
Yep. You're waiting for your
two huge Paul releases. Yep.
No, three. You're waiting for the $400 box set. Any day now, it should be coming out. It is. It's an embarrassment of riches here at the end of the year for Beatle fans, and very exciting. So there's going to be a conference next year at my alma mater, Eastman School of Music and the University of Rochester, on Abbey Road, and that's supposed to take place next September. So we had one for Pepper, we had one for White Album, now there's going to be another symposium in September of next year. So are you ready for the Abbey Road box set coming out, I'm sure?
Well, I think they'll do it.
Yeah.
I do think they'll do it now, because these have been so successful, and we've been, you know, if there's not as much on the bone as far as, like, extras, maybe that's where we'll get mixes of some of these we didn't get, Lady Madonna, some of the singles
you know, right.
from the era. I would hope that we'd get those mixes, new mixes at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a different type of package coming out. And then I think in 2 years, we'll definitely get a some sort of comprehensive Let It Be. What I'd heard is what they might do instead of releasing the old movie, which nobody likes, that shows them in a bad light, that they still have all that footage, that they'll go back and kind of like recontextualize that as like, well, it was not that great of a session, but there is still some great things about it, and then sort of like make it a little more positive spin on it.
Yeah, as long as they put both movies in, I wouldn't want to replace what was released, because that was a historical document. But if you cut a director's cut and the regular,
I think maybe they'd feature the new version of the film, and then kind of like, oh, and here's the old version of the film.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
Enjoy it. And of course, what did we do with this? We're like, oh, something new. Let's.
I know.
Let's dive into the bonus tracks, and we like barely even listen to the regular album.
Exactly.
It's been great. I'm glad that they're doing all this, and it's really like, Well, back to right the beginning of the episode, it's like a, you know, 20 years ago, digging around, scrounging around for bootleg tapes, mm-hmm. me, for anything I could have. It's like if I was told that in 20 years this thing would come out, it's like going to heaven.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's the
terrific.
Best. And I won't hear anyone's negative review about it.
I'm sure they're out there. Chicago Tribune. Yeah, there's.
Main nameless.
Yeah. Not everyone's been totally positive about this, but, you know, that's the great thing about music and the Beatles and the legacy. You can always look at things in a different way, and even if you're wrong, it can look at it a different way.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're totally, totally wrong.
Yes.
So we were going to go out with, we didn't play much Paul there at the end of the episodes. So we're going to go out with Mother Nature's Son, which starts really differently vocally. So it's really great to hear. That's take 15 of Mother Nature's Son.
And it's so great that even if you can't afford the super deluxe physical package, you can listen to this tune and all the other ones on streaming services and still have access to it. So very exciting. We recommend buying it if you can, or wait till it goes on sale, or wait till it's used copy. But even if not, you can enjoy a great tune like Mother Nature's Son. So two thumbs up, and enjoy this wonderful version.
Yep. And once again, we're always on Facebook. Talk to us on Facebook. Tell us what you thought, what some of your favorites are on the set. Follow us on Twitter at I Got a Beatles. You can email us too. What's
I've Got a Beatles podcast at hotmail.com.
Thanks for listening.
Born a poor young country boy, Mother Nature's son. Ooh. All day long I'm sitting singing songs for everyone. Sit beside a mountain stream, see rise. Listen to the pretty sound of music as she flies. Lazy song beneath the sun.